First Up continues here on TSN 1050. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. Tiger Woods speaking at a press conference at the Hero World Challenge as the host this morning. Man, some harrowing stuff coming from Tiger. Quote, "I don't see that type of trend going forward for me with regards to a comparison to his last comeback, which culminated with the Masters win in 2019. I won't have the opportunity to practice. It's going to have to be a different way of doing things, and that's okay. I'm at peace with that. I've made the climb enough times." Whew. Man, that's unfortunate. It's a little bit of a different perspective from Tiger Woods than what we've seen in the past, but I guess considering everything that he's endured physically over the last year makes a lot of sense. On the subject of injuries, the Toronto Raptors dealing with a number of their own heading into their game tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies. And we welcome in from CBS Sports, James Herbert. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. I know our producer, Arad, was telling us you're a Toronto guy initially, and so certainly you have a unique perspective as a former Torontonian into the Toronto Raptors and everything that they've had to deal with this season. Now, 9-12. Now, there's been a lot of ups and downs throughout the season, a lot of ebbs and flows, and I think a lot of that can be attributed to injury, right? I mean, now OG Anunoby's banged up with a hip, and Kem Birch is injured, and Gary Trent has a calf problem that may keep him out. But from what you've seen from the Raptors when they've been fully formed and fully healthy, do you consider this team as one that you've been impressed with, or maybe not as much as you expect at the beginning of the season?
I think I was really impressed with them early on in the year. I thought they were like the hardest playing team in the NBA. I think they took a lot of teams by surprise with just how aggressively they crashed the offensive glass. They're still the best offensive rebounding team in the league, and their defense was just sort of causing chaos early on. And they started really strong on that end. And you combine that with the fact that I think right from the jump, they were better than a lot of people thought they would be offensively. Scottie Barnes was more advanced than people thought he would be as a rookie. And I thought they were one of the best stories in the NBA after a couple of weeks. Now, the defense has completely fallen off since then. The scheme hasn't really changed, but as you alluded to, like that, the personnel has a little bit, and they've been, you know, trying to figure out, I think, how like they want to manage this rotation. I've liked what I've seen from Pascal Siakam offensively. I think he's coming around defensively, but the lineups have not been particularly, you know, solid on that end since he came back. And that's the thing that is sort of surprising to me, is I kind of thought this would, if anything, be an elite defensive team this year. And the fact that, you know, they've been a little bit disorganized on that end, the fact that they've given up just so many open threes so far this year, that has been the part that has kind of taken me by surprise. But I think at their best, if they can get everybody back and establish some sort of continuity, especially with that small lineup they were trying to start right when Pascal Siakam came back, then, I mean, we can get back in the conversation about whether this team can make the playoffs and the play-in and how this all can work. But I think it really has to start with this team getting stops and then getting out there in transition, because I think if they're going to be the best team it can be, it's probably not going to be because of their half-court offense or anything like that. Even though, like, you can point to a guy like Fred VanVleet and some of the progress that he's made as a creator and find positives in what we've seen from the half-court offense so far.
James, the Scottie Barnes progression throughout the season has been really impressive. I think he's exceeded basically everybody's expectations coming out of Florida State so far. And perhaps the most intriguing recent development has been the advent of his three-point shot. 9 three-point attempts in the most recent game against the Boston Celtics. He made 4 of them. If he adds this to his arsenal, what type of step forward could he take in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see if he can make them consistently, but I think the bigger picture as far as his development curve goes, that's incredibly important. I liked in the Boston game that he was hunting those threes. It was not always, oh, I'm going to take them because that is, you know, I'm being dared to. But he's stepping into those shots confidently. It seems like, at least in that game, that he wanted to take those threes. There's one pull-up three in particular I remember when I was kind of like, took a little step back in my seat, like, all right, Scotty, sure. That was not the scouting report on him coming in. But I think from day one with the Raptors, honestly, you have seen him being an aggressive scorer, whether you're talking about attacking the basket or whether you're talking about him having a little bit more of an attacking mindset as far as his jump shot goes. I think early on we saw that more with his mid-range game, and that was a lot of like sort of the initial impressions as well. This guy's a little bit more polished as an offensive player than some people described him as coming out of college. And he has like a little bit of a nicer touch than some people were anticipating. But if he can get that three-point shot consistently falling, whether it's this year or whether it's over the course of the next few years, then of course that opens up everything else with his game. Because I think, you know, you knew coming in he had this really good vision. He was a good playmaker. He thought of himself as a point guard, and he's like a big-time threat in transition. But if we are discovering that this guy can make plays in an in-between game, that he can bully guys and kind of push guys around and get to the basket like we've seen so much this year, then if you add the three-point shot to that equation, then like you have a pretty complete package offensively. And like if the Raptors are kind of betting on him becoming a star type player and one of the building blocks of their franchise, I think, yeah, of course, a three-point shot is extremely important, and they've prided themselves on the ability to develop their players, and specifically to develop shooters with guys that they've drafted that have not come into the league with a reputation of being consistent three-point shooters.
James, to stay with the Raptors theme here, you know, clearly they've had a lot of adversity to deal with here, and I think a guy that has managed it really well has been Nick Nurse. And even with just a guy like Scotty, where, you know, all the success and all the limelight he's received early on in the season, you know, there was a time in last game, early on in last game, where he decided to sit down Scotty Barnes because he wasn't happy with some of the details and mistakes that he was making in his game. And obviously that, you know, helped trigger his second half performance. And I guess my question to you is, you know, as a guy that views the Raptors from the outside looking in, and we watch them every game, where would you rank Nick Nurse as, you know, in the coaching ranks right now? Because he's a guy that's really innovative, really creative when it comes to his schemes. You know, you're hearing players like Dylan Brooks call him a coach guru. You know, he's a guy that comes up with the janky defense to defend Steph Curry in the championship run. How do you view a guy like Nick Nurse and what he's been able to do in the coaching ranks, and where would you rank him?
I think he's an elite coach. I mean, he won a championship in his first year. I think that put him, you know, in a little bit of a different category than most guys that at that time didn't have, you know, a ton of NBA head coaching experience. But I think not only did he earn his respect from that, I think he has been influential. I mean, you mentioned the janky defense is like, the Golden State Warriors, who were the victims of the box and one and the triangle and two in those finals, now we're routinely using those defenses against other teams. And then you've kind of seen that spread a little bit throughout the NBA. I think you've also seen, you know, when the Raptors were playing a much more aggressive perimeter defense, a lot of times when the title, but more so, I think, the season afterward, when they started really mixing things up, that they were kind of an outlier. And I think you just see a lot more teams now playing that kind of more aggressive perimeter defense. You're seeing less of the drop stuff. Teams still do that. The Raptors still, they have the ability to mix that in when they want to, although the personnel isn't great for that this year. But I think just in terms of, you know, I remember when Nick came in, and he was immediately talking about how he believes everything on the basketball court should be done with aggression, and whether that meant playing faster as a team, getting out in transition, or whether that meant trying to force as many turnovers as possible defensively instead of playing a more conservative style. Like that has been sort of the hallmark of the Nick Nurse Raptors, and I think that mentality has become a lot more prevalent around the NBA in the years since then. And so it's not just the kind of, you know, throwing out unconventional defenses, seeing more teams use zone, which, yes, that has happened, and I think the Raptors influenced them that way. But I think his sort of principles, I'm just hearing them echoed more and more around the league. And I think, you know, there's some stuff for him, the coaching staff, to prove this year, I think, specifically in terms of that defense, because I can talk about how good that all sounds, and we're still talking about a defense that has been drastically underperforming over the last few weeks. So we'll see if they can end up being that really good story that they seemed like they were in the first couple weeks of the season once we get to the end of this thing. But yeah, I mean, the track record over the past few years, some of the stuff that Nick Nurse has shown in the playoffs, I think he's absolutely, like, among his peers, among NBA observers, he is seen as a top level, maybe a top five coach in the NBA.
James Herbert is our guest. He covers the NBA for CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at @OutsideTheNBA. Well, inside the NBA tonight, the Warriors play the Suns. It's the first matchup in NBA history in which both teams enter with a win percentage of at least 850 and each on a 7-game or more win streak. I mean, this is a battle of two juggernauts right now. Golden State's been incredible. Steph Curry has been the MVP so far this year. And the Suns started off 1-3, and they've won 16 straight games, James. What are you looking for from this one tonight?
I mean, I'm just kind of looking forward to watching what seems like kind of maybe it's a potential Western Conference Finals preview. Like, whatever you want to call it, I'm just kind of psyched. I got the chance to see the Suns the other day in Brooklyn, and they took their foot off the gas a little bit in the fourth quarter, and I think the score made it look like a closer game than it really was for most of it. But, like, the way they came out in that game against, you know, a team that has championship aspirations itself, even though the Nets are not really fully healthy or playing quite like championship caliber basketball right now. I just thought it was so professional. It was it was such a disciplined effort. And I think the way that the Suns play, if you just watch them on a night-to-night basis, even against kind of more middling teams, they approach it as like, we are just going to surgically pick you apart. If you stop our first action, we are going to smoothly move the ball to the second side, and we're going to make you defend us longer, and we're going to get a good look. And they get a good look virtually every time down. I think they have changed a couple of things from last year. They play a little bit faster. They started doing that a little bit in the playoffs last year with Chris Paul throwing the ball ahead. But this year they've taken that to a little bit of another level, but most of it is the same. Like, they have a ton of continuity from last season with just a couple of bench pieces they've swapped out. Their defense remains elite as well. And I think, you know, you know the story with the Warriors. I mean, they're playing the same style they played basically forever, except they're taking more threes now. Like, Steph Curry, the best three-point shooter in NBA history, is a pretty good idea to have him launch more threes. And their defense is absolutely incredible. I mean, I would say Steph Curry has been the best offensive player in the league, and Draymond Green has been the best defensive player in the league. And then, oh, by the way, their second unit and their role players have just been playing an extremely high level all year, and that's what really has been the difference between the beginning of last season and now. I think they kind of picked up where they left off in the last 20 games of last year, and they did it with a little bit better talent around their main guys. So now we see Klay Thompson is practicing in the G League, and I think everybody around the team is just kind of imagining what it will look like once they add Klay to, and, you know, an absolutely incredible mix that they have going right now. So I can't wait to see this matchup.
James, I was really looking forward to watching the Miami Heat and Denver Nuggets game last night because it was the rematch of the Jokic body check on Markieff Morris and what was going to come of it, but I was amazed to see that the spotlight or the highlight of the game was the attendance of the Jokic brothers, like sitting behind the bench as like bodyguards for Nikola Jokic so that make sure that, you know, nothing got out of hand, and fans were booing him and stuff like that. How funny was it to watch that, you know, a game between those two good teams, that it was the Jokic brothers that got all the attention?
I mean, I think it's hard not to put the attention on them. Have you seen those guys? I mean, they're enormous.
I'm not messing with those guys.
No, absolutely not. I mean, that is, I think they're playing it up a little bit. They created that Twitter account they had active for maybe like a day. And the fact, like, I mean, I just thought it was a joke when I first saw it. Then I turned around, oh, no, that's actually the Jokic brothers. Like, I believe Mike Singer from the Denver Post reported that, you know, generic no profile photo Twitter account from Jokic brothers was actually them. And, you know, they're going to show up and they're going to look menacing. And I don't know. I don't take it that seriously, but I think it is pretty funny. And it's weird because, like, the initial, like, story that kind of spawned this was a sort of scary incident in a game. Marquise Morris is still out and not playing because of it. But, I mean, I think we can still enjoy the Jokic family experience. I mean, there have been some good stories written about those guys over the years.
No doubt about that. James, thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. That is James Herbert. From CBS Sports, covers the NBA. Have the Koliakovo brothers ever engaged in a brawl together?
No, never, man.
Yeah,
we're
you
lovers,
guys
not
have.
Fighters.
Come on.
No, man.
There's
we're
never
lovers.
Been an instance in which the Koliakovos, the Koliakovo bros, I guess you could call them, ever, you know, got into a little tussle?
Actually, the only time I can ever think of us maybe even entertaining into a good fight, we were young kids, and we were riding, me and a couple of my buddies were riding our bikes to this park that had moguls, like the dirt moguls where you can jump off of them and stuff. And there was this group of kids that decided to jump us and try to steal
really?
Our bikes.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was the only time I can ever remember even us trying to think about, but we were outnumbered. So it's like, here, you want the bike? Take the bike. Go ahead. Like, I'm not fighting you for it. And, yeah, that's about it. But that's crazy, man. It was so funny watching those Jokic brothers strut into the Miami Arena
Hilarious.
Yesterday.
So funny. They loved it. Those guys are scary. I wouldn't want to mix it up with the Jokic bros. I wouldn't want to mix it up with the – I don't want to mix it up with anyone. What am I
no,
going to do?
No, kidding.
Like,
exactly. We're lovers. But not to change subjects, but I think there's no other choice here because there's been a lot of Tiger quotes coming out of his interview that he just had. And one of them that I'm seeing is, I don't foresee this leg ever being what it used to be. The clock is ticking. I'm getting older. And then there was a question asked to Tiger this morning if there was ever the possibility of amputation for his injured leg. And he said it was on the table. Could you imagine having to make that decision?
Yikes. Yeah, that's a
so I think, I think we need to temper the expectations on what we expect from Tiger Woods and just be
only
grateful,
five more majors. You're right.
Just be grateful that he's walking and has a, you know, two legs that you know, and he's still, the one that he's talking about is still not even close to being ready to be, you know, an athlete or at least active again. So
it's going to make the comeback and the climbing of Mount Everest as Tiger.
So these are seeds
that
he's planting.
Exactly.
Right, for the
greatest comeback
ever.
In his head, he's like, wow, I can't believe these guys are buying it. I'm definitely winning the Masters in April. This is hilarious.
Sure.
They're believing any of this stuff I'm saying. This is a lock. Probably win a couple majors. Maybe win the Open, PGA. So three majors, pretty good season for Tiger in 2022. I think that's what we're all counting on. Probably a little bit facetious on my end, but yeah, we will, I'm sure, be hearing from Tiger on the various radio programs we have here on TSN 1050. Maybe not on Leafs Lunch. Al's brother and Julia may want to stray from the Tiger talk, but certainly on Gameplay and on Overdrive, I'll be a focus for the duration of the afternoon. Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakova with you. We wrap things up on First Up next.